This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Here comes the box office top 10. It's usually just Mark, but also, as Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright are here, and they want to tell you about Hot Fuzz, which they'll do in just a moment. If you've seen any of these movies, would you chip in?
Yes, sure. Absolutely.
In an entertaining kind of way. And if you haven't seen it, just make it up.
And can I just advise against the procedure which is now often adopted by people actually in the film industry, which is why I couldn't possibly comment. Yes, you can. Of course you can. That's the job.
Don't sit on the fence.
Exactly. Yeah. So at number 10, we have The Pursuit of Happiness with a Y.
I don't understand why there's a nomination for that film at the Oscars. I mean, it's suffer. End. Oh, no, sorry, Millionaire. But very, very briefly. It is waffle.
I haven't seen it, but what is the explanation for the misspelling?
Because on the nursery that he takes his kid to, the word happiness is misspelt. And at the beginning of the movie, he says, why can't you spell it right? And the whole of the rest of the movie is about the fact that people can't be bothered to spell the word happiness right. I mean, actually, it's probably about a lot of other things as well, but that's the thing that bothers him the most.
Number 9, Goal 2, Living the Dream.
And we are looking forward to Goal 3, Sleeping Through Second Half. I mean, it's one of those...
I think that they condensed 2 and 3 into 2.
No, it says at the end to be continued.
I think
it's a part of a trilogy.
It is, yeah, but a quadrilogy that's now come down to a trilogy and a one-ology was frankly too much. It's, you know, I mean, it's a football movie, and a football movie is a very difficult genre to get right. I mean, everyone always quotes Escape to Victory, but the fact of the matter is that he goes off to play for Real Madrid. David Beckham walks through being David Beckham. That guy Zinedine Zidane is in the second film of his that I have disliked this year, and what's her name, Anna Friel, spends the whole film going, oh no, exactly the way that she did in Rogue Trader, when she went, oh, Nick! That's Nick!
Dream Girls at 8.
I like it. I mean, I think people have been, you know, I think critics have been overly sniffy about it. I think it's a smarter film than people have perhaps thought. I think that Jennifer Hudson is great. Nice to see Eddie Murphy doing something back and forth, although I hear that he's torched his career again with the new movie that he's made, the posters for which are up already, which consists of him dressed as a fat woman, sitting on himself dressed as a thin bloke with an afro. So it's back to form.
With the unfortunate tagline, have you ever made a huge mistake? That's the tagline on the Norbit. I saw Dreamgirls and I enjoyed it.
Good.
But weirdly, all the things I liked about it, my girlfriend hated.
Oh, what?
People breaking into song.
Oh, no, we see.
That's what I liked about it.
Hang on, there's a very interesting discussion to be had about this, because the question of whether or not you think that all the songs should happen on stage, or whether it's okay for people in the middle of a sentence to do that, is really down to whether or not you are with musicals. Now, I love musicals, love Singing in the Rain, you know, love Mary Poppins. I had no problem with it at all. And people have a problem with it. I mean, it's interesting. If you showed it to a Bollywood audience, they wouldn't have a problem with it. It's just, it's a very particular thing that we have. Oh, don't like people suddenly bursting into song. It's lovely. Everyone says, I love you, the Woody Allen song, what he does. Woody Allen movie, I think, was one of his, you know, one of his better films.
I thought you said there was an interesting conversation to be had about that.
Okay, sorry.
I didn't know Dreamgirls was like a musical in that sense, though.
It is, yeah.
It is.
But that's exactly it. People think it's just the songs on stage. Right.
Would you prefer it if it's like Evita, where like everything is sung, as in an opera, or...
There's a lot of
twiddly bits in that. But would you prefer it all sung?
Well, I have to say that in the case of Madonna, when singing, great. When talking, absolutely rubbish.
Keep her singing.
Yeah, except, of course, in that Abel Ferrara film in which she plays a really bad actress, which she does quite well.
Maybe Swept Away would have been better if she'd sung the whole thing.
No, Swept Away would have been better if it hadn't happened.
Arthur and the Invisibles at 7.
Or Arthur et les Minimoy. Apparently this is another trilogy on its way. Madonna, sadly, talking, which is crucially wrong. My kids quite enjoyed it. I thought it was rubbish.
I haven't seen it, but I'm looking forward to Arthur and the Invisibles 2, Living the Dream.
With Anna Friel going, I know! But in a Newcastle accent.
Simon, does Edgar always monopolise conversation?
No, I've been very remiss recently.
I've seen more films than he has in the last
I haven't been to the cinema recently. I've been...
Blood Diamonds at 6.
I like it. I mean, as you know, Leonardo and I are apparently not on speaking terms, but I thought he did fine with
the exit. Because you insult his movies?
I didn't insult his movies. I said I forgave him for Titanic. That's a different thing. That is a perfectly acceptable thing to say.
Truth hurts.
Was that real? When I saw that on the Culture Show, was that real, the response to your Titanic thing?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know...
The point is, you'd said it to him before. The last time you'd forgiven
exactly.
him, he was on this programme and he's talking about some movie that he's in, and you say, I forgive you for Titanic, as though you're the Lord Almighty.
And your problem with that is what exactly?
Notes on a Scandal at 5.
Yeah, you know, Dame Judi Dench is good in the sort of nasty, slightly bunny boilery way. I don't think it's a great adaptation. I think it is probably an unfilmable book, and I think the film itself has flaws, but I do think her performance is very strong.
Haven't seen it.
I just feel like I've not done my homework.
You've seen nothing.
Have you got a note?
We've been busy. Yeah.
Did the dog eat it?
Notes on a Scandal does feature two Hot Fuzz cast members, though.
Well...
Nicely worked in. Hannibal Rising at 4.
Rubbish, 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 and more rubbish.
I must say, it does seem kind of silly to try and excuse... The film since Silence of the Lambs has somehow tried to convince us that it's okay to like him when that sort of... The dichotomy between him being attractive and abhorrent in the first one was great, but ever since then it's like, well, it's rude people he kills, so it's all right.
Exactly, but crucial question... What's the best Hannibal Lecter film?
Manhunter.
Yes, there we go. Correct answer.
So if you got that wrong, that would have been it.
It's out. Show. Well, because Brian Cox, very good. Sir Anthony Hopkins, pantomime dame.
He's very good as well.
Well, he's not really.
He is.
He's not. He's
no,
good.
He is.
He's good at doing Widow Twanky.
You're wrong.
Chianti.
He's good in Silence of the Lambs. But he is good in Hannibal and Red Dragon, particularly Red Dragon.
He camps it up.
Too much blusher on.
Yeah. But in Silence of the Lambs, a fantastic
He's all right. He's not great. The reason that performance works is because Jodie Foster looks like it's scary. If you took Jodie Foster away and put Dawn French in there, you realise that he is
well,
just
yes,
being
I
funny.
Suppose. And if you'd said it at the Vicar of Dibley...
that stuff is nonsense.
Epic movie at 3.
They didn't screen it
to
us.
They wouldn't.
No.
I'm just saying all dear based on the trailer.
I think your analogy about Bobby Davra is interesting.
Oh, yeah, those things like date movie and epic movie, it reminds me, when you see the trailers and you see... bits of people doing Napoleon Dynamite. Or
which is a comedy in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why are you spoofing it?
But it reminds me of like when in the 80s you used to see a comedian like Bobby Davro doing an impression of Dame Edna Everage and then just doing all of his material. Yeah. And it was like, oh, well, that's okay. So you do an impression of a funny person and you nick all their jokes.
Charlotte's Web at 2.
I mean, it's not Babe. It does have
it's Charlotte's Web.
No, thank you. Although it does have a talking animated pig in it, and therefore the Babe reference wasn't completely left of field. It does have at least the issue of dealing with death, although I think some sensitive children may find that heartbreaking. It's not great. I mean, Dakota Fanning's an interesting case because she is clearly very good at being Dakota Fanning. But it's
not a great compliment.
No, it's but she is Dakota Fanning very, very well. You know, she does. There's something, something steely about. I mean, she will be successful in future life. But it's not a great movie. It is not a great movie. But which is a shame because it's a very, very fine novel, obviously.
And the UK's number one movie is Music and Lyrics, which I have to tell you, my 13-year-old daughter has decided is one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah, look, Hugh Grant is Hugh Grant in it.
Not as good as Notting Hill was the official verdict.
No,
but. Better than Along Came Polly. That's
wow.
The scale of the achievement.
I think that really is the goalposts for which we're all aiming, and
that's
I think on that scale, that's perfectly fine. I mean, the thing is, he is a bit rubbish, but I do find Hugh Grant funny, particularly when he's being slightly slimy. I mean, Drew Barrymore doesn't get very much to do other than be a bit ditzy and walk in and out of doors. You know, but Hugh Grant just, and then he does the 80s pop star bit, which is quite good, and then it ends.
He'd have been good in Hot Fuzz, wouldn't he?
Grant.
Yeah,
I think he's very watchable, Hugh Grant. He always charms the socks off me.
Exactly. He is. He's a very watchable screen presence.
Mm. I have always thought he's good, but he kind of seems like somebody who's not really at peace with being a film star anymore. He seems to be the person, during the whole of the press tour for Music and Lyrics, he seemed to be its fiercest critic.
Well, good for him.
Well, that's okay, that's the top 10. We'll talk about Hot Fuzz in just a moment, it being one of the new releases, and as we have director and star here, it'd be rude just to ignore it or to leave it till 5 to 4.
And when has being rude ever stopped you?
Richard Dundas in Derby says, "Dear Dr. Kermode and his beautiful blonde sidekick, while watching Hot Fuzz on a rather lacklustre Valentine's night with an ex-girlfriend, I was pleasantly surprised to see Peg, Frost and Wright combine yet more genres seamlessly together. Where Shaun of the Dead created something unique from the rom-com and zombie genres..." Did you call it? Was it
rom-zom-com.
Rom-zom-com. Yeah. "Hot Fuzz felt more like a slasher film than a cop drama parody, filling the horror fan within me with glee. In fact, I'd say it does for Sanford what Psycho did for Showers. I was initially sceptical over the presence of a third act, but the sheer quality of the direction and general references to Straw Dogs left me wanting more. That's how you follow one of the greatest British comedies for years."
Thanks, Mum.
Thank you very much. What was his name again?
Richard Dundas.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks,
That's very
Richard.
Nice of you to say that.
Who's in Derby. So, we'll play a clip. We'll hear what Mark says. Just set up the general kind of
direction and idea here.
I think this is a little moment in which my character, Nicholas Angel, is teaching his new puppy-like partner, Danny, that...
Who is Nicholas Angel?
Nicholas Angel is a police officer from London who's been sent to this place in the West Country called Sandford.
Why is he so successful?
Because he's very good at what he does, and he's kind of upset the figures in London. So they've sent him away to the most crime-free village in the country, almost as a punishment for being too good. And he's teamed up with a very enthusiastic young constable called Danny, played by Nick Frost. And Angel is here teaching Danny that something is always happening, no matter how quiet it may seem.
Tease us.
Well, I think Nicholas has his street smarts about him when he goes down to Sanford, and pretty soon starts to suspect that the place may not be all that it seems. And of course, in order for it to become an exciting film, it isn't. And
that's the way script writing works.
if Sanford had indeed been exactly as it appears, that would have been
It
would have been like an episode of Doc Martin.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I like Doc Martin.
Actually. No, I'm not saying, you know.
I mean, not a lot, but it's very nice.
What's Doc Martin?
The Martin Clunes thing on ITV.
Yeah, and he plays a grumpy GP.
It's like sort of Northern Exposure, but set in England.
What's Northern Exposure?
That's a great American TV show that was on in the 90s.
Okay.
But we kind of, in a way, we wanted it to start out as something like that, as quaint, and then inexorably become something far grander and sort of alien to that sort of environment. So... again, it's that kind of transition from Britishness into Hollywoodism.
Timothy Dalton was on a couple of days ago telling us about this very picture.
The Daltonator.
Is that what
you're calling him? We started calling him. He was so kind of rock solid, we started calling him the Daltonator.
That's very good. and I spoke to Mark just before that, and he combined a TV show plus two movies to describe the feel of this film, which were...
Who, me?
Yes, you. You're called Mark. I'm looking at you. I'm pointing my bio at you.
Did I say Vicar of Dibley, Straw Dogs and The Wicker Man?
No, I think Bad Boys 2, I think.
Oh, but, no, but that's because there's a specific, you know, Bad Boys 2 theme running through. So that's, you know...
But that general... The village is kind of Vicar of Dibley-esque, is it?
More of a sort of...
Miss Marple-esque.
Yeah.
I suppose because we both grew up in the West Country and there's definitely, like, not only a... is that's a perception of kind of like, you know, rural England, that it's like that. And it's especially with international audiences, I think most people around the world think that the whole of the UK is like Miss Marple. And so there's a night, we just thought, because we were from the area and we wanted to make a cop film, the idea of like setting like a really overblown cop action film in like the chocolate box, picture perfect kind of countryside was what really appealed to us. And because we were, you know, both from Somerset and Gloucestershire, we thought we had the right to do it.
How many extremely good British cop films are there, Mark?
Well, you want an exact figure? Well, 37.
Really? Take us through them.
My age.
The Blue Lamp?
Yeah, do we start with The Blue Lamp? I mean, the ones you'd have... it depends what you define as a cop movie. I mean, do you mean a crime movie or a cop movie? I mean, if it's cop movies... Well, there's the Sweeney movies, which aren't actually very good. I mean, do you count Get Carter as a cop movie?
No.
Because Gangland...
Can't have Get Carter.
We did watch it as part of our research.
Yeah,
the weird thing is that the cop movie... as a genre, has become confused with the action movie. And I think, you know, there are crossovers in the sort of generic Venn diagram of movies, but cop movies and action movies aren't necessarily the same thing.
British cop movies?
There aren't, really.
That's why I asked the question.
I suddenly realised now that it wasn't just a throwaway comment. Well, it was a pithy, incisive question that cut straight to the heart of
the matter. It was an observation that there aren't that many.
Well, when we were researching this and when we were writing, we tried to watch all of the British cop movies and they comprise thus The Blue Lamp... The Offence.
Oh, The Offence is a great movie. That is a great movie, don't you think?
Brannigan, which isn't really a British cop movie,
but no, because John Wayne
cops in it.
John Wayne leaps over the opening tower bridge.
I watched it. We showed it at the ICA the other day on the big screen.
Fantastic.
How about,
do you remember the poster, which was Brannigan takes on London's cops, LA style.
Hilarious.
How about The Boys in Blue with Cannon and Ball? Does that count?
You watched that again recently.
I watched it again recently.
You watched it again?
I saw it when I was younger, and it was strange, you know, because Cannon and Ball. A part of a different sort of kind of comedy sort of world in a way, in that variety sense. So in a movie, I don't think it was their sort of strongest platform.
Did they make
you're
a better
being
movie?
You're so nice about this.
No, but I think the whole thing is that the British Police Service not force, they're called the service now, have been hard to kind of glamorise in a way. It's quite a traditional force. The uniform isn't sort of, doesn't lend itself to sort of romanticism. And people have shied away from actually making them into sort of movie figures. And like in the Sweeney movie, it's this classic because they're, you know, obviously because they're plain clothes, they're cooler. And all the bobbies get shot in the head and stuff. You know, they're like, they're just like cannon fodder.
Well, that was when we first kind of pitched the idea to Working Title. Their first question was, are they going to be uniform cops? And we said, yes. I said, but that's so uncool. And I said, then that's exactly why it will be cool. You know, it was the whole idea of, like, because we, you know, and there are so many British gangster films, and we kind of felt there was just an absolute, you know, surplus to requirements amount of films about the underworld being cool and people with shooters and, like, this kind of, you know, sort of...
Although, presumably, you could have, after Shaun of the Dead, you could have pitched absolutely anything you wanted.
Well, so we wanted to make sort of Bad Boys 2 in the West Country. That's exactly what we did.
There's been this kind of assumption now that we're kind of ticking off the genres, and it's not true. I think we only realised that we'd kind of done a similar thing again when the film was completed, and it's simply because we're big fans of zombie movies, so we did Shaun of the Dead. We're big fans of the, you know, the sort of action police crossover genre, so we did this film, and we simply wanted to stay at home and do it as well. So inevitably you end up with a sort of juxtaposition of context. You know, you've got an American looking thing in an English setting, and it's kind of, we've done it twice.
Just so we can work out what we have to fit in before 4 o'clock, apart from all with Simon Egger, how many movies are we going to talk about apart from this one?
Well, four if we have time. I mean, I can belt through a couple of them, obviously.
I know you can, but which would be the key ones to mention?
Well, Eklavya, which is a very interesting Bollywood movie. Ninth Company, which is the Russian version of Platoon.
Casablanca's out, and I think a lot of people might be waiting to find out what you think about it, because it could go either way on that.
Yeah, and of course, you know how it ends.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. So,
go on, what's the last line? You don't know how it ends. What's the last line of Casablanca?
We'll always have Paris?
No, that's not the last line.
This is the beginning of a
beautiful friendship. Well done.
I was just going to get to that. Mayo at bbc.co.uk. So we do more with Simon Pegg, more with Edgar Wright, more with Mark Kermode, and your correspondence, Mayo at bbc.co.uk. Insightful questions like this from Stephen. My mate was behind Simon in the queue in the Crouch End Blockbuster last week, but couldn't see what film he was taking out. Could he enlighten us? Simon.
Yes, I think we got out...
Goal One, wasn't it?
No, we got out The Breakup and The Black Dahlia.
And what did you think of Black Dahlia? It's all style, no substance.
It's a good book. But
do you like the way he gave you the answer there as he asked you the question?
Well, you know.
Sometimes there's this kind of odd assumption that all books will make good films, and it's not necessarily true.
And did you spot the voice of Brian De Palma?
I didn't.
Oh, he's
a director saying, can you act? Can you actually act? Can you act?
On the film of the Dahlia.
In the film of the film.
We have some other great cop movies being suggested here, because we have Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, as well as Mark Kermode, Hot Fuzz being one of the new releases. On the Beat with Norman Wisdom has been suggested as a great British cop film.
Didn't we watch a clip from that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Them jumping over fences, in fact.
Yeah.
Carry On Constable.
Yeah, Carry On Constable. Actually, Carry On Constable is one of the better ones.
Victoria in London, great British sort of cop movie, Deathline. Raw Meat. Donald Pleasance.
Drinking tea.
70s cop investigating midnight abductions by inbred, plague-ridden Victorian cannibals on the underground.
Down the gap! Deathline is an absolutely brilliant film. The Chapman brothers, you know, Jake and Dinos Chapman, consider Deathline to be one of the great influential movies in their, you know, in their artistic development. And I think they're quite right. And when that rubbish thing came out, was it called Creep?
Creep.
Which, you know, it's like, yeah, I saw Deathline and it was great. And why isn't this?
Christopher Lee is his snotty boss, says Victoria. What's not to like?
It's brilliant. Donald Pleasance's performance in that is hilarious. It's one of the funniest performances I've ever seen.
Knowingly funny or not, I'm not entirely sure. But it's the fact that every time something horrible happens, they go and have a cup of tea. There's just lots of tea in that film.
I like a Deathline, though. He has a go at the hippies. He keeps going, get your hair cut.
And Inspector Calls? Not Uniform. Is it? Presumably the Inspector.
Is there a film of that? I've never seen it.
You haven't?
I haven't seen a film of The Inspector.
It's a theatre.
I've read the play. I think I've seen the play, but was there ever a film? There must be.
You haven't seen the movie?
Yeah, there was. Ken Cranham did it in the West End, I think.
But that's on theatre.
Yeah, but as a play, yeah.
With an incredible set that sort of opened up like a huge, like, giant flowery
Martin thing. On this email says, the last time I remember Simon Pegg being on your programme with Mark. It may have been for Shaun of the Dead. Mark admitted that he'd never seen the sitcom Spaced. Simon Pegg suggested he might appreciate it, as there are so many movie references in it. I wonder if Mark has taken the opportunity to catch up on this strand of Simon's back catalogue.
I don't think we ever got it.
Do you know how many movies there are released every week nowadays?
Well, I've got no time for television.
No, it's not that I've got no time. I mean, I have got no time. I mean, it's like, you know, Al Krim Giovanni probably has no time for films. Pardon me?
What is the number?
It's averaging about 8 or 9 at the moment.
Listen, we're fine with that. We understand.
Thank you.
That's only one film a day, isn't it?
No, it's 8 or 9 films on Monday and Tuesday. That's how it works.
Well, that leaves you the rest of the week to catch
up.
Yeah,
I do nothing at all. I know.
You watch The Exorcist for another, like, 4 times every day.
That's right, yeah, just to keep, you know...
Martin also said...
Also constant read circulation.
Simon is planning a one-hour special of Spaced. Could you ask him when that might be?
I'm not.
You're not very good.
It would be nice to revisit the show in some respects, but in others, I think it would be slightly sad to see us all in our late 30s as those characters. You know, I think that Spaced was of a particular time, and although I do never say never because you never know, I think maybe Spaced is finished.
Here's a very important thing, because it occurs to me we haven't got to this point of the conversation. What do you think of it, Mark?
Well, you know, it's very interesting, and it's always very difficult reviewing films when people are in the studio.
Would you like them to leave?
We love your work, Mark.
No. So here's the thing, you know, I have the...
Simon is leaning forward trying to catch Mark's eye.
I have the 5-laugh rule, and, you know, the rule is if you get past 5 laughs, it's okay, it's a proper comedy. I have to say, I got past 5 laughs in about 10 minutes. I really did laugh a lot. I really like the relationship between Simon's character and Nick's character, which I think all that underplayed comedy is something which, you know, is very, very hard to do and does work very well. Admittedly, I saw it with an audience who were clearly ready to like it because there's so much goodwill as a result of Shaun of the Dead, and rightly so. Shaun of the Dead was an exceptional piece of work, and I think that the real triumph of Shaun of the Dead is it did manage to do humour and horror together. Were very difficult. The Evil Dead is one of the few movies that's got that right. Before the moment when he says, you know, I don't know if I can kill my mother and my best friend in the same day, is genuinely quite moving. Now, in the interest of being completely fair, I should say that I think that thing about an episode of, what do you call it, Midsummer Murders, as directed by Tony Scott, if there's a flaw in the film, it's that in the end, when we get into the action sequence, I lose interest. And I think partly what happens there is that takes over. And that's absolutely fine, but for me, I would have brought that back, but I'm not a filmmaker. So I think the end of it kind of overplays itself. However... That said, I think there is enough that is really funny and really witty and really genuinely, you know, laugh out loud. Gosh, isn't it good that we can make movies that are this entertaining? To kind of forgive it is a problem. And I remember there's a famous maxim, you know, Roger Corman once said there are very few movies that wouldn't benefit from losing 20 minutes in the inclusion of an exploding helicopter shot. And it is absolutely true that it's almost impossible to tell anybody what it's like, you and me in the James Bond film.
I don't think Driving Miss Daisy would have been improved with that, though.
I think Driving Miss Daisy would have been enormously improved by an exploding helicopter shot. It's almost impossible to tell anybody what to lose. I mean, actually, in the case of this, I think exactly I know what it is that bags down for me at the end. And I'm sure that when you get things into the editing room and you're having so much fun and you are kind of turning into Tony Scott, it's absolutely fine. That's, you know, that's my criticism of it. But I think the character... I think... I'm getting a voice in my head. I think the character stuff is really great. I think the jokes about the Wicker Man and Straw Dogs, with the man trap and all that kind of stuff. The problem with that stuff is it can fall into simply checking stuff off, and I don't think this ever does, because I think the difference between actually loving movies and enjoying them, I mean, being somebody who likes Point Break, I like Point Break a lot, actually. The first time I ever saw Point Break, I thought it was a really great movie. To pay homage to those sort of things, and to Wicker Man, and to Straw Dogs, and to all those movies, is different to just simply doing what we were talking about before with movies like, I presume, epic movies like this. I think it's a movie made by people that genuinely love their films. I do think that the stuff between Simon and Nick is just laugh-out-loud funny. And I can forgive you for the 10 minutes too baggy at the end, because, you know, because, hey, the fact of the matter is...
That's the director's fault.
Of course it's the director's fault.
I'm the one who's done wrong here.
No. No, but let me be absolutely clear. I don't think for one minute that, you know, Simon would be funny without you telling him how to be funny. It's the direction of comedy is the thing that always gets overlooked. People think that you direct comedy by putting a camera in front of two funny people and letting them do the stuff. Comedy direction is the hardest thing to do.
It's true.
It is the hardest thing to do. Comedy timing, comedy editing is the hardest thing to do. And this is why I'm so strict on the five laugh rule. Simply, if you don't laugh in a comedy, it's not funny. And I literally, I looked at my watch and we were 12 minutes in and I'd done me five laughs and it's like, that's it, I'm with it now. And after that, I'm home and dry. And I had 90 minutes of a really, really good time.
Can you sort of breathe happy now?
No, that's good. And, you know, it's funny, like, saying about the ending, because in a way, sort of, like...
It's on purpose.
Yeah, the idea of the film is it starts to mutate into something else, and almost,
And Tony Scott does grab hold of the controls.
I know, and I sort of, I enjoyed doing a Stars in Their Eyes Tony Scott. it was a lot of fun. And also, the idea with the endings is like, there's, you know, you could count, you know, sort of so many kind of action films where you think, yeah, Speed was really good. Didn't need the bit on the train at the end.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And so there was an element of that being a joke of, like, these Chinese box endless kind of, like, denouements. You know what? And I'd also say, for the record, if we could have afforded to blow up a helicopter, I would have.
Regular listeners will know the answer to this question. Who is the train driver in Speed?
In Speed?
Who's the
train driver in Speed?
What?
The
tube driver.
What?
No, are you not talking Mission Impossible? David Schneider?
No. David Schneider.
Oh, I don't know.
Who's the train driver in Speed?
Yes.
What, this Dennis Hopper sequence in the end?
Yes.
In the subway?
Oh, I don't know.
It's Richard Schiff, who plays Toby Ziegler in West Wing, because he was here on Tuesday, and a number of people were mentioning his other roles, and then... There.
I have to say, actually...
Didn't make it onto any of his biogs, that one.
In response to Mark's comment about comedy directing, I have to agree, and I think Jessica and myself get a lot of... props for Spaced, and I think we always try and say that Edgar was the third writer on that series, because it was a lot to do with his visual style that made that show very funny, and I think he's taken that into...
Now, we have some other movies to talk about. Just stay, gentlemen,
You only have to look at a badly directed comedy. I mean, the funniest script, the funniest performances, badly directed, are not funny.
And to the question... And Inspector Calls, was it a movie? Yes, it was. Alastair Sim starring in Inspector Gall in 1954, and obviously that's what I was referring to.
We've all been shown up today.
It's just out on the director's cut, I think.
Okay, I will watch it.
Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg still here. Mark is here, and some movies to... We've done Hot Fuzz, but we'll probably return to that in a few minutes' time, depending on what people want to say about it. Mayo@bbc.co.uk. What else is out, Mark?
Well, let's do a couple of things quite quickly. Eclavia, right? Which is... recently, Bollywood movies have started being shown to the English-speaking press, although not enough of them. And there are certain sort of clichés about Bollywood films, which is... that, you know, they're all too long, they've all got loads and loads of singing and dancing in them, they've got sort of slightly flimsy plots and all that kind of stuff. Because that's not true at all. There are action-adventure Bollywood movies, there are Bollywood movies based on Shakespeare. I mean, there's that thing Omkara, there's Makbul, which is a version of Macbeth. I mean, there are many different types of Bollywood movies. Now, Eclavia is an interesting case in point, because it's basically a fairly straight, well-done melodrama, which has a kind of Shakespearean tone to it. The story is that the main character, Clavia, is a royal guard. At the beginning of the movie, there is a king and queen, and the queen dies. And as she dies, she calls out Eclavia's name. And it turns out, of course, Eclavia is the person who has fathered the prince, who is then called in to come in and discovers that the king is blah, 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 blah. Okay, fine. So standard Shakespearean things, you know, fathers, sons, mothers, heritage, history, past, all that sort of stuff, all thrown together in a two-hour movie that does have one musical sequence, but it's almost completely, diegetic or exegetic, which is the one I mean, diegetic. It's in the world of the film. There is actually an excuse.
So diegetic means in the world of the
film. I always get this wrong.
Diegetic
is inside, isn't it? And exegetic is outside. But it's almost entirely within the world of the film. Because there's a moment when somebody says, do you remember that song that I used to sing you when you were a child? And then they do the song. It does go into a musical sequence. So it is slightly musical in its... but it's fine. And at the centre of it all is Amitabh Bachchan, who is this enormous Bollywood star, who is absolutely magnetic presence. And almost every film, Bollywood film, that I've seen recently has got him in it in some shape or form. And in this, he plays the title role. And he is magnificent at melodrama. He has these kind of deep whirlpool eyes and a very, very intense face, manages to convey extraordinary emotion without doing very, very much. Now, the interesting thing about the film is that although it is clearly coming from a particular tradition, and in fact, it's interesting, Pete Bradshaw in The Guardian wrote something quite about a year ago about how interesting it was that Shakespearean themes seemed to fit so well with the construction of Bollywood melodrama. And I think he had a very good point. And in this case, I just thought, this, you know, it's great. I'm a fan of melodrama anyway. I thought the movie itself is exactly 2 hours long, and, you know, most Bollywood movies are about 3 hours long, and I thought it was interesting to see it being reined in. Very well directed, very well put together, and I think very, very accessible to a Western audience. If you're not somebody who saw, you know, Devdas or, you know, all that stuff, then it is well worth seeing if you can track down a Clavier, The Royal Guard, because it's a very fine piece of work.
Are you offering a heuristic or hermeneutic reading of the diegetic matter?
Edgar.
Sorry, I was just like, that was, sorry.
You're just laughing at me.
No, it was getting very...
No, no, if there's something
like
funny,
it.
I think you can share it with the class.
I'm sorry.
Listen, you get away with it on the Culture Show, we get away with it on this programme, just about. That's a fairly standard, it's an opening question on the Culture Show.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so what else?
Two other things. Very quickly, I want to do Ninth Company. Ninth Company is a Russian movie which has broken records in Russia. It took something like $7 million in its first 5 days, and I think it's the first film in post Communist Russia to have taken over $20 million. Okay, the story is basically, it's rather like a Russian version of Platoon, gag being it's Platoonsky or it's Full Metal Comrade. Difference is, rather than having Vietnam, right, you've got Afghanistan. I mean, funnily enough, I did a set report on a Russian horror movie back in the 1980s, a movie called Dark Water.
It's a long story, everyone.
No, I'll give you the short version. It was set in Russia, it was financed by Ukrainians, it was directed by an Italian, Mariano Baino, and the cast were basically Russian-speaking English phonetically, and it was a very, very difficult thing. You know, very. But recently, Russia has started making incredibly mainstream movies. The Night Watch film, of course, I think there is a trilogy of Night Watch films coming. It's very, very sort of westernised looking. Well, Ninth Company is a very western-looking war movie that in many ways follows the Full Metal Jacket template, in that the first hour of it is a bunch of grunts brought in, shouted at by a guy who says, you are absolute nothing, or niet, or, you know, all that, and shout to them for an hour. And then they get sent out to this terrible posting where horrible war happens. It's all kind of pointless. And, of course, it's set at the point that Russia is on the point of withdrawing anyway. So great tragedy, great loss of life, great suffering, all that sort of stuff. It's not fantastically original, but it is interesting to see Russia making such westernized movies. I mean, there's a degree of macho heroics about it, and in exactly the same way as Oliver Stone's Platoon makes you think, you know, that the people who had the worst time in Vietnam were Charlie Sheen and his, you know, and his buddies. It is definitely seen from that point of view. So I don't know that it's a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination. I think in many ways the problem with it is that it's very much a Western movie. But it is interesting to see Russia now exporting movies that are so clearly made in that Western mould.
A couple of things then. If you bump into Mark, we mentioned last week, ask him his Harvey Keitel story, okay, which is unbroadcastable. Now ask him about his Russian war film experience as well. He can add that, and then you've probably got about.
Have I told you about the Russian?
Yes,
horror
yeah,
film,
it was yeah. a very long car journey.
That's why I walk like this. Exactly.
It's during the World Cup, we had a lot of time to kill.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's one more thing. A question here from David Myers in Brigg. Could you ask Simon Pegg how much of his comedy he learnt on our nights out at Binton Folk Club?
Who said that?
David Myers?
I did used to go to Binton Folk Club.
But you've forgotten David Myers.
I was
you?
In a. David.
I was in a, you've changed.
I was in a band.
You were talking about him outside, weren't you? You're saying how much you hadn't seen him for a long time.
Well, Myersoid. Oh, yeah. Him, I love that guy. Yeah, I do remember. I used to be in a band called Blind Dog Harrison and the Dirty Gerbils. And we used to
That's
do.
A great
we
thing.
Cleared this folk club of reputable and respectable folk musicians by doing bad covers of Beatles songs. And yes, I learned all of my comedy there.
It's the straight answer to the question.
I was saying I was going to get those two out of the way quickly. So Science of Sleep, new movie by Michel Gondry. Michel Gondry, of course, started out doing pop videos, incredibly inventive pop videos, Lucas with the Lid Off, which is just fantastic, everything in one shot. The Kylie Minogue spinning around video, the, what they call, White Stripes, you know, the Lego video.
Bjork,
all the Bjork. Do we say Bjork or Bjork?
It's Bjork.
Bjork, fine. Anyway, so then went into feature filmmaking and really made his name with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which, of course, was written by Charlie Kaufman. Now we have a new Michel Gondry film after Dave Chappelle's Block Party, which is written also by Michel Gondry. I won't attempt to do the plot, but what you need to know is Gael Garcia Bernal, Stefan, and Charlotte Gainsbourg, Stephanie, have this kind of on-off relationship in both their waking and sleeping life, in which they are joined, at least in some of it, by a shared love of animated cellophane. Visually, I think it's great. I think Gondry, he's very interested in the mechanics of cinema. He doesn't use, you know, fantastic CGI special effects. He's kind of has a kind of Lumiere Brothers Chaplin-esque approach to the movie camera itself. I mean, I just love that bit when Gael Garcia Bernal gets so excited. He says, I'm going to go away and go and get my dad's movie camera and we can make a Russian animated short. That is how Gondry thinks. And I think from a cineast point of view, that's very interesting. What you lack here is a Charlie Kaufman script. And people underestimate just how good a scriptwriter Charlie Kaufman is, in that he can do surreal, but he does it with structure. And he's very, very sort of clear about his dialogue, and he's very clear about the structure of the film. And there are, in The Science of Sleep, there are several sections when you're actually not sure where you are. And I think that the problem with that is that when you have unmediated whimsy, which you have in this case, that occasionally it can get, you can get lost amidst.
Give me an example of mediated whimsy.
Well, I would say Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a perfect example of mediated whimsy, and I think I thought that was the best film of that year, if I remember correctly. It's a journal of record. It'll be somewhere out there on the Wikipedia, probably. But in this case, you have all the visual invention, you have all the wit. You have Gael Garcia Bernal, who's a very warm, you know, screen presence. What you don't have is the rigorous structure and the rigorous screenwriting that I actually think, in the end, Gondry needs. I mean, it is important that some of the best work he ever did is for 3-minute songs in which the structure is clearly delineated. You know, this is how long you've got. It goes verse, chorus, verse,
I think Wes Anderson sometimes has a problem with unmediated whimsy.
Absolutely.
No, I was going to say, yes, but Wes Anderson is darker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also he can rein it in as well.
That's right.
He
can. Yeah.
See, he's doing it with a straight face. I don't know whether he's laughing.
I mean, yeah.
I just can't tell. It has been
Wittertainment at its most
wittertaining.
Movie of the week.
Well, Hot Fuzz. I mean, like I said, it's really funny. It's really funny.
I love you, Mark.
So that was Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, who both take responsibility for Hot Fuzz, out in cinemas now. If you're after some other top interviews, try downloading our other podcast, The Daily Mayo. This week we've had Richard Schiff of West Wing fame and Doug Ellis, the former Aston Villa chairman, apparently. It's all online at bbc.co.uk/5live.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.